Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 366. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a fun show for you this week. Let me introduce our guest to you. Zavi Matisse is the editor-in-chief of Revolutionary Gay Magazine. We're going to talk all about it. He's also a pop artist, a photographer, a music producer, a graphic designer, a songwriter, and the founder of the remix duo The All Nighters. And somehow he has some time to spend here with us. Zavi, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you for having me.
We have so much ground to cover. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm absolutely ready.
You have to tell everybody about Revolutionary Gay Magazine. For folks who have not checked it out, what will they see when they encounter this publication for the first time?
It's just pretty much a gay pop culture magazine. It's online. You can just type in Rev Gay Mag or Revolutionary Magazine. We're on Instagram, Tumblr, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. It's pretty much laid back and fun, nothing too serious, but it's just empowering our community, our LGBT community, and so that's what we always focus on. You know, so much is going on in the world, so we just want to have fun. We just want to, you know, showcase people in the community, and that's what Revolutionary Gay is all about.
What does the editor-in-chief of Revolutionary Gay magazine do?
I actually created Revolutionary Gay because I saw magazines both published and online that didn't really speak to the entire community of predominantly gay men. It's usually stereotypical or sexualized always. So I just kind of wanted to give a full-rounded kind of magazine where you can read kind of like, seven things men can do to spice up their life, or or an article about something that's important that's going on in the LGBT community. Or, it could be either lighthearted or political. But I just wanted it to be pretty much all about every race, every color, every size in our community. Not just one general specific thing.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I was noticing about the magazine and why I wanted to have you on. Because it just feels so much more inclusive than a lot of the other publications out there. And it strikes me that's probably what you're going for.
Yeah, definitely. There's other magazines that I look up to, like The Advocate, Out. I definitely respect them. And I know some of the editors there. Great people, great visionaries. But sometimes it can be a little bit either stereotypical or one-sided. I think they're doing a lot to kind of include other people now, especially in 2016. But I've been around for a while, so I've kind of just steered in that direction. So some people have followed me.
How do you just decide one day I'm going to start a new publication? How do we get from the idea to actually making it happen? Because when I think about that, I feel overwhelmed.
It was not overwhelming. It was I just would be online. I would go to all these gay websites, or I would go into Barnes & Noble, and I would see things that were gay, and it was great. But I didn't see me, and I'm actually Hispanic, so I didn't see a lot of black. I didn't see a lot of Hispanic. I saw predominantly white, which is okay with me because we also showcase clearly my covers a white man this month. But we wanted it to be where it wasn't just talking about HIV. It wasn't just talking about men in Speedos. It was talking about people like me. Like, you can look in the mirror, that's who I'm talking to. So that's really what I wanted to do, and I didn't see anything like that out there. So I just wanted to empower my community, and I just created it. I started with a Twitter account, and then it just blew up, and it became what it is today.
Oh, that's so amazing. I would imagine you're feeling kind of proud about what you're putting out there.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud, because I've gotten emails from people from China, people from Italy, people from Mexico, Spain, even Africa. Literally, I would get tons of emails like, wow, thank you for, writing this article. Thank you for, I see myself in those relationships. I'm very, universal. I don't just speak on just what I believe in. I speak on behalf of gay men all over the world, you know, and they appreciate that. And that's really fulfilling for me.
Oh, my gosh. So what is the typical schedule look like for you? How do you go about sitting down and deciding, all right, this is what we need to put together to make this month's issue happen?
It is very stressful.
Yeah, I feel like it probably is.
It's stressful because, you know, I want to, you know, just as much as I get the love, I get the backlash. So if I put something on there that, you know, I've had people say, oh, you're supposed to be revolutionary gay, and why is there a hot guy on your cover? Shouldn't it be like a kind of feminist man, you know, or whatever? And I'm like, that's not what revolutionary gay is. That's a stereotype. You know, just like people stereotype, you know, what I was doing when I was reading the regular magazines, people would do to me. So I just said, you know what? I know what this community needs. It just needs a lightheartedness, something fun. And that's what, you know, just people just kind of figured it out. Like, don't take everything so seriously. Just have fun and take what you need to take seriously, and what you need to take not seriously, don't take it seriously.
There it is. All right, well, let's talk about some of the pieces that jumped out at me. Talk to me about A Gay Man's Guide to Being in a Relationship in 7 Easy Steps.
Well, I'm 35, but in my 20s, I had a lot of fun. I went out, did what I had to do, but I also had my share of relationships. And I'm also I'm a journalist, so I'm also an observer. And I just noticed in my relationships what people liked, what people didn't like, what I liked, what I didn't like. And I learned, you know, I learned from the good and the bad. And also my friends, I would observe my friends who would go get cocktails or have dinners. And I would observe what they would do wrong and what they would do right. We would just sit around. It was kind of like a Sex in the City for me, for gays. So I took all of that stuff, and then I just kind of inserted it. And that's what my articles mostly are about, just from real life and putting it into writing.
We enjoy that. I will say one of my favorite pieces, the 20 most awkward drag queens to ever grace RuPaul's Drag Race.
I got a little heat for that, though.
It was indeed my assumption that you did indeed get some heat for that.
You know, like anything you put out there, whether it's music, art, whatever, you're always going to get a whole lot of love and a whole lot of support. And then you're also going to get the people that are like, you know, trolling you. And then there's the people that are in between like, you know, what do you mean awkward? But it actually was lighthearted. If you really look through it, it really is empowering drag queens. I'm a huge fan of RuPaul's Drag Race. It's just kind of like when you watch the show, if you're a true RuPaul's Drag Race fan, you notice there are some drag queens that are very awkward. Like, for example, Mystique Summers, who I love, she's very awkward in her season.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she just kind of just would sit there and she would make these faces, and it's lovable. It's not anything like, oh, she's awkward, she's weird. It's more like, oh, look, she's awkward, and there's a lot of them. So that was my thing, you know?
Yeah. I looked at, there's one piece, and I want all of our listeners to check this out. We're going to give you the information over and over again so you can check out this magazine. I looked at the 7 underwear inventions that are utterly ridiculous, and I'm feeling pretty good about my boring choices.
Listen, I love a sexy underwear. I love colors. I love prints. But there are some ridiculous underwear out there. You know, especially when you're going to, like, go and shop online. They, it's like, oh, do you want the thong? Do you want the sling back? Do you want it? Whoa, it's like a lot, you know? It gets really ridiculous.
I love it. Now, here's the interesting thing about you, sir, is that were one to follow you on Twitter, you personally, which I encourage people to do, it's not all fun and lighthearted, which I appreciate. I appreciate that you really are putting out some topical issues too, but also recognizing, yes, I have this magazine that's trying to be more lighthearted. How do you approach balancing those two sides of the coin?
It's really hard because I'm a recording artist. But I'm also an editor-in-chief. I also have, you know, work that I do on the side. So it can be really bipolar, you know, creative-wise. But I think every true artist can multitask, can do a million things at once and still get the same point across. So that's how I do it. It can be hard, of course. But if you focus and you really are determined and love what you do, then, you know, it shines through.
Yeah. You know, it really is still revolutionary in a lot of these different LGBTQ publications to feature people of color. I mean, I appreciate everything that you're doing, and then I turn over and I look at some of your colleagues, and I respect them enormously, right? We've had all these folks on our show over the past 8 years talking about these different publications, but the representation is you know, especially as someone here who teaches race, this is what I do for a living on a college campus, the representation out there is pretty darn white.
Yeah, you know, and this is the thing, that it's completely okay to be a white person.
Yeah.
It's completely okay to be a sexy white person. It's great and have blue eyes, and that's wonderful. I mean, I celebrate everybody, but like you said, it's hard to open a magazine, especially me growing up, you know, and a lot of kids in the closet where, you know, the only thing you get is like a magazine at Barnes & Noble's. So you're kind of like, oh, you know, I'm looking through the magazine secretly, but you don't see black men, or you see a stereotype of a black man. You know, you don't see Hispanics. I don't see a lot of Asians. Not even in gay porn. You know, you don't see a lot of Asians. It's really weird how our community, as supposedly united as we're supposed to be, we don't really embrace cultures. And if you go to the clubs, you go to the bars, you notice the Asians are over here, the whites are over here, the blacks are over here, you know, and that's, to me, kind of weird that it's still happening, you know, till this day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's do the two sides to doing this type of work. Let's do the highs first. What's one piece that got a ton of attention that you were like, yes, I really wanted people to check that out?
Okay, 7 relationship mistakes gay men make that became blockbuster. I was in Wisconsin. I was recording, because I'm also a producer out of my other hat. But I was in Wisconsin for about a month and a half, and I was not doing anything revolutionary gay for a while. And I went online. It blew. The gays went crazy. I mean, if you go online, they even translated into Chinese, Spanish, Italian. Other online magazines were actually taking my idea and not putting my name on it. It was so weird. I never experienced anything like that. So I think that the seven relationship mistakes gay men make, it became so big. I think even Cosmo covered like their women's version of it. That's how deep it got.
There it is. There it is. Okay, but let's do the other side. What's one piece that more people should have read? Because you think, yes, this is something that everybody needs to know about.
I would say, oh, you know what? I got a lot of backlash for this. There was an article that I wrote about terminology, gay terminology nowadays, like genderqueer, binary, cisgender, or cis, trans, you know, trans, cis, all of that. I just felt like there's a lot of people that are very comfortable and are very in the know when it comes to those words. And then some of them don't even know what it means. I felt like sometimes certain gay BT communities or LGBTQ communities would attack people for not addressing them by cis or, you know, gender binary, whatever, you know, they call themselves. So I wrote a whole article on that, and I got a lot of backlash. Like, how dare you? Oh, you're racist. You're homophobic. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's a gay magazine. So it was really like, that was taboo, for people.
Yeah. It's amazing how words just get people all up in arms. We really struggle with our words.
It's weird, you know. It's not just the gay thing. It's in, I think it's in like 2000, ever since what, like 2015, 2014, I think people just started getting very PC, very like offended by a lot of things. I don't know what's going on in the world. It's getting weird.
All right. That's why we have Revolutionary Gay Magazine, so we can make things a little bit less weird or maybe a little more weird, whatever. You're playing a part in this, and I love it. I love it. You have, I said in your intro, in your bio, so many other titles out there. What else feeds your soul? Of all this other work that you're doing out there, what else do you just love doing that you like putting out there to the world?
I really love doing music. Music is definitely one of my things. I have an album out called Order on iTunes, and that was a reflection of my life. That actually is a reflection of the writings that I also do on RevGay. You know, songwriting is my thing. I've written for other artists as well. So that's definitely something important to get your creativity out there, and that's more personal for me.
Nice. All right, well, tell our audience everything that's coming up with RevGay Magazine. What should we be looking out for?
Well, it will have its own website. I had a website before, but I took it down. because I had some issues with it. But I'm going to do a new website for it. You know, models, any models that want to be part of the magazine, they can always email me at revolutionarygay@gmail.com. I'm always considering all types of races, sizes, drag queens, gender, you know, whatever question mark you are, it's fine with me. You know, we embrace everybody, even straight people, you know.
So it is possible to be a model and not have each individual ab defined?
I've had people, I mean, I've had Latrice Royale, you know, on my cover. I've had an Israeli queen called Nona Shalan. I don't know if you ever heard of her.
No.
I've had her on my cover. She's completely amazing. You know, I've had, like I said, I've had black men, Hispanic. I've had Asian, white, Italian, German. They've all been on it.
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, tell our listeners one more time where they need to go to get all of this great content.
Well, it's simple. You go revgaymag.tumblr.com. You can go on my Facebook, revgaymag, Instagram, revgaymag, and Twitter, revgaymag. So everything is pretty much revgaymag.
There it is.
You can get that.
There it is. Well, I have to tell you, I saw this online. I just think it's so much fun. And it's just one of those publications that you can thumb through and just like feel good. And we need more publications where you can feel good, engage with the content and see that diversity and see that representation that actually is in our LGBTQ community, but see it there on the page. So you're doing some great work, sir.
Absolutely. And also, I think you're talking also about the 35 LGBT creative minds. Every month, I handpick 25 to 35 people in the community, lesbian, transgender, gay, LGBTQ, whatever, and also friends of the LGBT community. And I like to showcase them. It's not a bio, it's not nothing, it's just appreciating the person for being part of our community or supporting our community. And every month I do that. I want to share the love. I just want to emphasize, we need to love one another in our community. We need to showcase the people that are behind the scenes doing great things. I think they deserve spotlight as well.
There it is. There it is. You, my friend, need to keep doing what you're doing because you are giving a voice to a ton of folks who would like to see some representation where it is sorely needed. So please keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Folks, and we are back. Well, we have so much time left on this week's episode, so let's get to all of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there. I have to start where we kind of left off last week, and that's what's going on here in Cleveland, Ohio. To recap, if you did not tune into last week's show, and you know that you can, by the way, right? Every episode that we have ever done is located right there on this show is SoGay.com. So just stroll on over there, click on podcasts, and you can listen to every show we've ever done. It's all there. But if you did not hear last week's show, the news in Cleveland almost 2 weeks ago, was the sudden cancellation of Cleveland Pride. Now, Cleveland Pride here in Cleveland is not sponsored by one of our official organizations, our LGBT Center, Equality Ohio. It's sponsored by a group called Cleveland Pride, Inc., and they're a nonprofit whose sole purpose is to put on Cleveland Pride. Well, even 2 weeks later, we still don't really know why they canceled it. We really don't. The president of Cleveland Pride, Inc., Todd Saporito, has done numerous press appearances. He's been on the local stations here. He was on a radio show this week where he was point blank asked, well, again, why did you cancel this? Because the phrase that they used when they canceled it in their ambush of a press release was a changing social climate. And no one knew what that meant. Is there a threat? Well, no, there's not a security threat because the police have said there's no security threat. Are you not prepared to do it? Well, Todd said, no, we're prepared to do it. So in this radio interview, in his latest radio interview, he named another city official who refused to meet with them or just didn't have time to meet with them during the RNC, and so they had to cancel the entire city's pride. Well, the story has a happy ending, and I mentioned this, and it's only gotten better and better as this event comes together. The LGBT Center of Greater Cleveland, and in full disclosure, I do volunteer there. I go there on Wednesday mornings. I did this all summer on Wednesdays. I volunteered at their front desk, and it was an incredible experience for me. I knew what this organization did, but sitting there answering the phones for what people call in for was incredible, and I highly recommend to all of you. I think that when you think about volunteering, it's like, oh gosh, what am I going to do, and how are they going to put me to use? For me, sitting there answering phones was wonderful. It really gave me an incredible sense of some of the needs of the community and just what that organization does. I would argue you probably could learn the most about an organization by sitting there and answering their phones and hearing what people call in to talk about. So it's been great there. So full disclosure, yes, I volunteer with the LGBT Center. The LGBT Center of Greater Cleveland came together with a couple different organizations and a lot of community leaders, and they put together a new event for the same day. So with only 2 weeks to plan it and put it all together, whereas the other organization had a year and some change because the Pride here in Cleveland was moved to August to accommodate the Republican National Convention. So even with 14 months, that group wasn't able to pull it together. But in 2 weeks, which is significantly less than 14 months, the LGBT Center of Greater Cleveland has pulled together Pride in the CLE. And it's going to be great. It's going to be on the same day. So it's on August 13th. So when many of you hear this, it will have already happened. But if you are listening to this podcast before August 13th and you can get to Cleveland, get to Cleveland. They've totally simplified the event. It's a 0.4-mile walk, not even 0.5. It's not even a half mile. It's a 0.4-mile march. We're calling it a march. It's not a parade. There's nothing motorized. So it's just boots on the ground. Individuals and individuals who are parts of groups will be walking together 0.4 miles across the Detroit Superior Bridge, which is a beautiful bridge here in Cleveland, and we'll be ending up in Cleveland's public square. And that's kind of our version of Central Park, although I think that's probably a really unfair comparison because our public square is really, really tiny and Central Park is ginormous. But it's our version of a central gathering place park, and it's all brand new there. They redid the whole thing. I'm telling you, if you have not come to Cleveland either lately or ever, you gotta come to Cleveland. So much money poured in for the RNC, and for those of us who live here, we kind of reap the benefits of it because there were a lot of amenities that were added, and we get them all now, and the Republicans are all gone. I mean, there's still some because there are Republicans that live here in Cleveland, but we got all these amenities to make the Republicans happy, and then they all left, and we get to keep them. So I'm all for that. So the new public square is one of those amenities. So the 0.4-mile walk is going to end up in public square, and it's just going to be a small stage. There's not going to be any vendors. There's not going to be any 1980s singer-songwriters on stage. There's no entrance fee. It's just pure and utter pride. Well, I felt a little irresponsible in writing my first piece for the Huffington Post that went crazy viral called Cleveland Pride was just canceled and it hurts. Given the new developments, I felt like I had to follow that up with something. So I wrote a new piece called Cleveland Pride was just restored and it rocks. And in that piece, and what I want to share with you all, and then we're going to get to all the latest news out there, has been what I've been hearing a lot of people say constantly. And it was in the press release from Cleveland Pride, Inc., out to the community when they ambushed us by canceling Pride. It was this reminder of, hey, pride is every day in your heart. And that's not a word-for-word quote, but that's what it felt like. Pride is not just one day, everybody. It's something you should feel every day. Now, of course, that's true, but it's also a little bit of BS because that diminishes the importance of this one day of pride that is so, super, super important. And what we saw here in Cleveland after our pride was canceled is evidence of all of that. We had individuals here in Cleveland who were planning a variety of pop-up pride events before the LGBT Center introduced us to pride in the CLE. Pride organizers everywhere from all over the country were reaching out, from Orlando, Florida, and the great work they're doing there to recover and build community after the tragedy that happened there at the Pulse nightclub. So everywhere from Orlando to Chicago to Pittsburgh to, I got communication from Great Falls, Montana, all these individuals stepping forward who organized Pride in their communities to say, hey, what can we do to help? And it was just everybody pausing and just saying, yeah, we totally need this. And I'll just read to you a little bit from what I wrote in that piece, because we do need a day of pride. We do need a day to celebrate our rich LGBTQ cultural history. We do need a day where people can be out and proud with their children or their coworkers or just themselves. A privilege, by the way, I have to remind you all that not everybody enjoys the whole year round. We do need a day to stop and say, hey, we don't have the same rights and protections as our cisgender brothers and sisters in employment and housing and blood donation and adoption and, you know, just in general. Generally not being murdered, as happens to many of our brothers and sisters in this community, in particular trans women of color, and that inequality is not okay. We can do all of that every single day of the year. Of course we can do all of that every single day of the year, but pride, this one day of pride, is about doing all of those things together, being seen as a group, protesting as a collective, and just standing next to someone else. And so I just want to remind all of you, there is a unique power in standing next to other people and doing all of those things. And it's a power that we really should be wielding. Well, the end of the story for me, I will be recording at Pride, so I will try to put together an episode for Pride. I said that on last week's episode. That has gotten a bit more complicated for me because I have since been asked, since last week's episode to this week's episode, to be the MC of the entire Pride Festival. It is such a huge honor for me. I am so excited to do it, to lend my voice in that way, to stand up on stage and introduce different acts and to keep things moving and to keep folks entertained. I could not be more excited to be the MC of the Cleveland Pride in the CLE Festival. So I will be up there. Come see me if you have the opportunity to, and just want to put that out there. So that's it for Cleveland Pride. Let's talk a little bit about the Olympics. There is a lot going on in the Olympics. First, we must highlight there is a record 49 out LGBTI athletes that are competing in the Rio Olympics. This is a record number of publicly out lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex athletes. Outsports and Olympic and LGBT historian Tony Shupam-Bilton has identified, again, 49 out athletes who are going to compete, and several out athletes have also qualified for the Paralympics. There are a record 11 publicly out male athletes, although none of the 11 out male athletes are from the United States. None. Not a one. There's also one married couple, Helen Richardson Walsh and Kate Richardson Walsh, who are British field hockey players. I love it. I love it. The list also could be growing as the Olympics continue, so other people might be coming out. And so just to compare this, 49 out athletes, that compares to London's 23. And I am no math wizard, but 49, so much more than 23. But very intriguing that none of the out males are from the U.S. The U.S. does not have any out males. And we've seen a number of incredible LGBT stories from the Olympics. One great one, Rafaela Silva, a judo athlete who won Brazil's first gold medal at the Rio Olympics, publicly came out as gay in an interview with Globo Sports. Silva became a national hero this week when she won the gold medal in the 57K, which is the 125 pounds category. Media worldwide have written about her rise from Rio's notorious City of God slum and her fight against ugly racist comments in Brazil after she failed to medal in 2012. But none of that press coverage mentioned that Silva is a lesbian with a partner of 3 years, Camara Cesar, and that's because Silva did not want to talk about it. Outsports was told by two sources, including one Brazilian journalist this week, that Silva is gay and that her Instagram account is loaded with photos of her and her partner together in obviously romantic poses, with messages that include copious amounts of hearts and sayings such as, "You do not exist without me." The Brazilian journalist reached out to Cesar on Outsports' behalf to confirm that she and Silva were indeed in a relationship, and Cesar did not comment on any of that. But Silva has since said that she credits Cesar for being there for her as she trained and prepared for the Olympics. Silva said this, quote, "She was there every day and knew how I was feeling, when I was sick, when I wasn't. Everything I needed, she was there to do it. She's also very important in this victory." There you go. So Silva, one of the 48 openly LGBTI athletes in Rio and a gold medalist right there from Brazil. Love it. Now, not all the stories have been happy. After Larissa Franca and her Brazilian beach volleyball partner Talita Antunes won to advance to the Olympics round of 16, NBC cameras stayed with Franca as she raced to the stands. The first person she went to was Liliane Maestrini, whom she married in 2013. As the couple hugged and shared a brief kiss, the commentary from NBC's Chris Marlowe was this, quote, "She gives a hug to Lily. That is her husband. She married Lily in 2013, and Larissa is celebrating with her pals." Huh. It's a bit of a bizarre statement. Well, NBC announcer Chris Marlowe has now apologized for referring to the wife of this openly gay female Brazilian beach volleyball player as her husband. Marlowe said this, quote, "I'm sorry for the mistake today. Clearly, Liliane is Larissa's wife." There you go. So a bit of an apology just for some context, as Outsports, which is a wonderful, wonderful organization that focuses on LGBT athletes. So go check them out, outsports.com. They noted this is an improvement from 2008 when NBC refused to acknowledge the boyfriend of openly gay diver Matthew Mitchum, who was cheering him on in the stands in Beijing as he won a gold medal. This week, during this 2016 Olympics, during men's synchronized diving, NBC showed Tom Daley's boyfriend slash fiance Dustin Lance Black in the stands, but made no mention of who he was. So they weren't able to mention there that Dustin Lance Black is his fiance, but they had a shot of him, so there's that. So yeah, some work still to be done in press coverage there, NBC, really important. And by the way, not just NBC, but also the BBC. The BBC has been forced to apologize after a commentator for the Rio Olympics Games was accused of homophobia. Paul Hand's comments came during a kiss cam feature at a tennis match. During a break in play during the Johanna Konta and Svetlana Kuznetsova match, which I watched, the cameramen zoomed in on couples sitting next to each other. As the camera moved around the ground, the presenter joined in with the fun, telling one couple, "Come on, let's have a kiss." He then joked, "Let's hope they don't go on," to two blokes sat next to each other. Well, Twitter users were quick to criticize Hand's remarks, with some accusing him of casual homophobia. One user wrote this, quote, "Couples in Rio crowd kissing went on big screen. BBC commentator, let's hope we don't see two blokes. No, let's hope we do. Hashtag homophobia." So there's that. Other people tweeted, quote, "Everyday homophobia from a commentator. I hope BBC will have a word." Well, a BBC spokesman later condemned Hand's ill-judged comments, saying this, "We apologize to any of our viewers who were offended." Sadly, this is also not the only report of homophobia during this year's games. LGBT athletes say they are also being targeted with homophobic chants from the crowds at Rio. Female football players have reported hearing anti-gay Portuguese insults, which I'm not going to repeat here, which have been shouted by Brazilian fans. U.S. soccer player Megan Rapinoe, who is an out athlete, says the hurtful jibes are down to mob mentality. Meanwhile, a lesbian couple, can I end with some happy news? Very, very happy news at the Olympics. A lesbian couple became the first couple to get engaged at the Olympics. A rugby player was proposed to by her girlfriend following rugby finals at the Rio Olympic Games. Very exciting stuff. Isadora Cerullo, who is one of these out athletes, was a member of the Brazil squad that narrowly missed out on reaching the knockout rounds. However, despite her team losing out to Australia, Cerullo soon had a reason to celebrate. Following the first women's rugby sevens final ever to take place at the Games, Olympic history was made yet again when her girlfriend took to the field. Marjorie Enya, who is a manager at Deodoro Stadium, grabbed a microphone before delivering an emotional speech to her girlfriend. As Cerullo accepted Enya's proposal, the pair embraced to whoops and cheers from the crowd. Enya said this quote, "As soon as I knew she was in the squad, I thought I have to make this special. I know rugby people are amazing and they would embrace it." She added that she was not nervous about proposing to Cerullo, who she described as the love of her life. I love it. The Olympic Games can look like closure, she said, but for me, it's starting a new life with someone. I wanted to show people that love wins. Love that story. All of these LGBTI angles from the Olympics, and they're not yet over, so we will bring more to you next week, I am sure of it. But for right now, we're going to take a quick musical break, and we'll be back with more news. Folks, and we are back. Well, more news. Let's finish up with our sports news. In a new poll, 56% of Division I basketball coaches told CBS Sports that the NCAA should refrain from hosting any more tournament games in North Carolina. Over the last few weeks, CBS Sports has conducted interviews of 110 Division I basketball coaches about various issues. One of the questions they asked hit on a very hot topic. They asked this, quote, "Should the NCAA refuse to host any more NCAA tournament games in North Carolina until the HB2 law is amended or eradicated?" The question came as the NBA was trying to determine whether it should pull its All-Star game from Charlotte in the wake of the anti-LGBT HB2 bill, which most importantly discriminates against trans people. And just to remind you, the NBA did indeed decide that they would withdraw their game from North Carolina. One coach told USA Today this, quote, "The only way for the populace to influence the decision makers is by actions that bring light to the issue. What the NBA did was significant and created a conversation. The NCAA should be doing the same thing. The ACC should do the same thing with their tournament that is in Greensboro this year. I would love to see the coaches of UNC, Duke, and NC State come out and say it." Another coach who opposes withdrawing from North Carolina told USA Today that they support the bill. That coach said this, quote, "The NCAA should host games in North Carolina regardless of this law. My biggest problem with this is not that I am against LGBT, but that I am for protection of kids. If my little girl is in the bathroom by herself, I would prefer not to have a male dressed as a female using that restroom with her." So, of course, there's opposition, but 56% of Division I basketball coaches said in a poll that the NCAA should refrain from hosting any more tournament games in North Carolina. Sometimes it's just participating in a poll, folks. That's where this change starts. The next step would indeed be these folks using their voices to say, hey, out loud, we should not be doing this, and attaching their name to it. And just to remind you all, North Carolina, a great state. Every time we do a North Carolina story, I know all of you over there on WPVM The Voice, 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina, where they broadcast us. It's terrible, right? We don't want to categorize your entire state by HB2. So that's where we have to remind our listeners. North Carolina, so much more than HB2. But my gosh, HB2 is costing the state of North Carolina a ton of money. A ton of money. Not just in contracts being revoked or basketball games not being held there, but tourism dollars of people saying, you know what, no, I'm not going to North Carolina. It must all be like this. And it's not all like this, but indeed, this is a big issue. A big issue in North Carolina. More along the same vein, Kimberly Shapley is fighting for her daughter, Kay Shapley, to be allowed to use the correct facilities before the 5-year-old even starts kindergarten. She has taken her fight to the Pearland Independent School District. She said this, quote, "I went to the campus and approached the school district to try and work with them. I wanted to make sure Kay wouldn't be discriminated against and be able to use the girls' bathroom, but it soon became very apparent that the superintendent has a very strong prejudice stance against the LGBTQ community." But the district superintendent, Dr. John Kelly, released a statement saying that he thought the directive by the Obama administration to allow trans kids to use gender-appropriate facilities was, quote, "one more example of unconstitutional interference and social engineering by the federal government." He went on to compare trans bathroom use to, quote, "legalizing pedophilia and polygamy." He said this, quote, "unless we return to the biblical basis on which our nation's laws were established, we are in serious trouble and cannot expect God's continued favor." This is a district superintendent. This is an individual who heads up the education for an entire district, saying that, quote, "unless we return to the biblical basis on which our nation's laws were established, we are in serious trouble and cannot expect God's continued favor." That separation between school and church, this is a public school district. Huh. Certainly more work to do there. More work to do all over the place. People saying some really nutty things. Pastor Stephen Anderson of the Faithful Word Baptist Church in Phoenix, Arizona. Well, he is one of America's most homophobic pastors. We have talked about him before. He has previously called for the execution of gay people by stoning, because that's biblical. He openly celebrated the Orlando massacre in June. He told his congregation this, quote, "the good news is that there's 50 less pedophiles in this world because, you know, these homosexuals are a bunch of disgusting perverts and pedophiles." Well, in a new sermon this month, he declared that any man who isn't, and I can't say this word on our show, I don't know that the FCC bars it, but it's a word I'm not comfortable saying. It's the F word, the horrible F word used to describe gay people. But he said that any man who isn't like one of these F words should be able to demand obedience from his wife. He said this, quote, "the Bible teaches that the husband is the head of the wife and that wives should obey their husbands. People have been doing it my way for the past 6,000 years and it's worked out great. But we're supposed to get on this trendy little," and there's the F word, "type of relationship. Me and my wife are supposed to have the same authority? That doesn't appeal to me. Being a hetero kind of guy, I want to be different from my wife. We as Christians should follow a biblical lifestyle. And honestly, women are just as happy in this lifestyle as men when the husband is the leader. Women are not wired to want to be in charge and rule over a man. Even the feminist women, deep down, are like, please rule over me." He added this, quote, "I challenge any woman right now to come up and arm wrestle me right now. I'm going to make the challenge that I've made over and over again. I'm not the strongest man in the world. Any woman can come up and arm wrestle me right now. And if you can come up and defeat me in an arm wrestling match, I'll admit women are as strong as men. I've had about 5 women take me up on that over the years, and they went down, and they went down hard, all right? Ha, I even made my wife arm wrestle me." So, if you are in the Phoenix area, or perhaps you have the ability to go to Phoenix, I challenge you to go to the Faithful Word Baptist Church and go arm wrestle Pastor Stephen Anderson. I think you can take him. I think many of you can take him. Why do we cover these stories? People write in all the time, and you can send emails. Please do it. Ken@thisshowissogay.com. Send your emails on over there. I answer every single one of them. Sometimes it takes me a few days, especially with school starting in just a week, but every email gets answered over at Ken@thisshowissogay.com. So people write in and say, why do you cover these stories? Because it's important to know that these things are being said out there. That's important to know. We need to know that they're in, not just individuals, not just Pastor Stephen Anderson, but his whole congregation who is so attentive to his every word, and people who eat this stuff up. I learned that here in Cleveland. The local newspaper ran an article about my Huffington Post piece that went viral, the original one about gay pride being canceled here in Cleveland. And I've heard before that there's this site called Cleveland.com and the comments are horrible. I had no idea just how bad they were until I saw the anti-gay rhetoric. Now, are these just internet trolls? Absolutely. But they're out there, folks. They're absolutely out there. And some of them are in positions of power. Case in point, let's turn to Alabama. Anti-gay Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore was met with applause this week when he entered the state court for the judiciary hearing for this hearing that could determine whether he will be removed from the bench for the second time in his career. Supporters rallied outside the courthouse shouting biblical condemnations of marriage equality, while a smaller group of pro-equality demonstrators gathered on the other side of the courthouse. Well, Chief Justice Roy Moore, now reminding you, he was suspended with pay in May. He is accused of violating judicial ethics by seeking to stop same-sex marriages from taking place in Alabama, even after a federal district court and the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the state's ban on such marriages violated the U.S. Constitution. Well, more than 6 months after that Supreme Court ruling that brought legal marriage equality to all 50 states, Roy Moore still going this route, trying to block same-sex marriages. There is no question, this is not in question right now, that Roy Moore issued a directive in January to Alabama probate judges, and those are the judges who are responsible for issuing marriage licenses. No question he encouraged them not to issue licenses to same-sex couples. The missive suggested that the U.S. Supreme Court ruling only applied to the five states referred in the case and not to Alabama, which is just blatantly not true, and it frightens me that he's able to read decisions in that way. Very, very bizarre. Aside from the impropriety of a sitting Chief Justice commenting on a case pending before the court over which he presides, his January directive ignored the legal reality that decisions from the U.S. Supreme Court are legally binding in all 50 states. But his attorney, Matt Staver, founder and director of the anti-LGBT nonprofit Liberty Council, well, he told a packed courtroom in Montgomery, Alabama this week that the Chief Justice never told anyone to deny marriage licenses to same-sex couples. All he was trying to do was raise a question that had been raised by probate judges regarding whether the state's ban on same-sex marriage was still in place. He says that Roy Moore was simply stating a legal truism that the state's marriage ban remained in effect despite several court orders to the contrary. Very, very bizarre. Former federal magistrate John Carroll said that that argument defies common sense, and John Carroll is representing the Alabama Judicial Inquiry Commission. So, yeah. Defies common sense. The statewide Judicial Ethics Commission in July asked that the Court of the Judiciary, made up of 9 people, to forego a trial and immediately remove Roy Moore from the bench. We will see what happens with Roy Moore. If he is removed, it would mark the second time, not the first, not the first, folks, but the second time that ethics violations have prompted his departure from the state judiciary. Alabama's Court of the Judiciary removed Moore from his position as Chief Justice in 2003 after he refused to comply with a federal court order requiring him to remove a monument of the Ten Commandments he had commissioned himself and placed on the state courthouse grounds. Alabama voters, will they return Moore to his position as the state's top jurist in 2012? So this is not some fringe guy who has no support. this is not like that pastor in Phoenix who, yes, he has a congregation, but I feel like he largely makes headlines because he's so fringe. No, this is the top judiciary guy in Alabama. He is the Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice. And the voters have put him in office repeatedly, as recently as 2012. Yeah. We'll keep our eyes on it. The court has promised to issue its ruling on whether the case against Moore will be dismissed, result in his immediate removal, or go to trial soon. Alabama. Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore. More stuff, more stuff. How about Marco Rubio? Marco Rubio is scheduled to speak at an event organized by a coalition of anti-gay groups next week in Orlando, on the two-month anniversary of the Pulse shooting, but he spoke out saying it was disingenuous to call the event anti-LGBT. He said this, quote, "The event I will be speaking at in Orlando is a gathering of local pastors and faith leaders. Leave it to the media and liberal activists to label a gathering of faith leaders as an anti-LGBT event. It is nothing of the sort. It is a celebration of faith." Marco Rubio said that to the Tampa Bay Times. The event is called Rediscovering God in America. It is organized by the Florida Renewal Project. The group has close ties to the American Renewal Project, which has a history of supporting anti-LGBT policies. The Florida senator told the Tampa Bay Times, he continued by saying this, quote, "I've always supported a traditional definition of marriage, but I recognize that a significant number of Americans hold a different view. Because marriage is regulated by the individual states, they have the right to petition their state legislature to change the law, and those of us who support traditional marriage also have a right to oppose those efforts." In an interview with The Advocate after the Pulse shooting in June, Marco Rubio said this, quote, "I don't need investigators to tell me the gay community was targeted in this attack. Watch the videos. We know what ISIS has done to people they accuse of being homosexual. They throw them off of buildings. They execute them." So, we will see. We will see. I guarantee you, right there at the Rediscovering God in America conference, if anything anti-gay is said, it will be covered. And we will report it back to you. Over in England, hate this story, a gay couple in Sainsbury, that's in England, say they were left feeling humiliated after a security guard spoke to them outside following a customer complaint about them holding hands. Thomas Rees and his boyfriend Josh were shopping after work at a Sainsbury store in Hackney, London on August 8th when a security guard called them over. The security staff asked them to follow him outside and explained that a female shopper had complained that they were touching and behaving inappropriately. Huh. Mr. Rees, who was then offered a gift card by Sainsbury as compensation, he got a gift card, a 10-euro gift card. He tweeted the supermarket chain complaining about how the incident was handled. He wrote, quote, "To the bigot who complained about my boyfriend and I holding hands and the security guard who felt the need to talk to us outside, I just don't understand why he needed to take us outside and why he needed to tell us. There was no sense of humility. I refuse to believe that this would have happened to a heterosexual couple. We just stared in disbelief. The issue here is that it felt like 1960s Britain." Huh. Mr. Rees told the BBC the security guard aggravated it more by asking them to follow him outside. He added, quote, "I have nothing to be embarrassed or ashamed about. I shouldn't be removed from the store." A spokesperson for Sainsbury said this, quote, "We sincerely apologize to Thomas and Josh. We are an inclusive retailer and employer and do not tolerate discrimination in our stores. We will take appropriate action once we've concluded our investigation with our security contractor." And there you go, they got a $10 euro gift card, which is actually worth more than 10 American dollars. It's 10 euros. Very exciting there. So if you hold hands, then maybe you can get a 10 euro gift card. I'm going to start holding my partner's hands more. I'm going to do it. I like doing it anyway. As long as we are over in the European Union, although I know, yes, England, not a part of that anymore. Let's go on over to Serbia. Some history, incredible history in Serbia. Anne Bernabach, I am sure that I am mangling her name, she is making waves. She is one of six new ministers in the Serbian government, but she has been getting all the attention as she is poised to become the first openly gay minister to serve in the Balkan country. This is a huge deal. The 40-year-old speaks English and Russian. She was educated in the United States and the United Kingdom. An expert in public administration, she established the National Alliance for Local Economic Development in 2006. Until her appointment to the Serbian government, she served as the president of the executive board of NALED. She made headlines around the world, however, as she prepares to be sworn in this week as the first openly gay minister in Serbia. She has no party affiliation, and people are tweeting about it all over the place, and it will make a huge difference. She said this, quote, "Hopefully this will blow over in 3 or 4 days, and then I won't be known as the gay minister. I'll be known as the Minister of Public Administration and Local Government." It very much makes a difference. Very much makes a difference when we see these incredible individuals role modeling that, yes, you can achieve anything. And previously, there wasn't a gay minister there in Serbia, and now there is. And that doesn't speak to her qualifications. Of course not. Of course not. She has incredible qualifications. But there will be individuals who see, oh, I can achieve that now, who previously thought, I cannot rise to a certain level of office if I'm gay. And now they will see Anne Bernabach, and it will make a huge difference. Over in Indonesia, not as good. Not as good in Indonesia. The spokesperson for the president of Indonesia has said that the country has no room. They have no room at the inn for the LGBT community. Amid reports of an unprecedented amount of anti-LGBT attacks in Indonesia, Johan Budi, the spokesman for the president, has said there is no room for the LGBT community. He said, quote, "Rights of citizens, like going to school and getting an ID card, are protected, but there is no room in Indonesia for the proliferation of the LGBT movement." So yeah, Indonesia, not a place that you're going to be visiting anytime soon, because there's no room for you there. No room at the end. And finally, some good news. Executive producer Brian Fuller says Star Trek Discovery will honor the spirit of inclusion. Star Trek Discovery, a new show coming out, will make its maiden voyage in 2017 with one of the most diverse crews the galaxy has ever seen. Discussing the upcoming prequel series, executive producer Brian Fuller said the show will absolutely have a gay character. Very exciting. He said this, quote, "Star Trek started with a wonderful expression of diversity in its cast. You had a Russian with a black woman and an Asian man amongst a Vulcan, which is a different kind of diversity. We're absolutely continuing that tradition." Very good stuff. Why is that important? Because again, any representation is important. It really is. It makes a difference. Kids see themselves represented. And they can see, oh, yes, that's me. I see myself represented. I am gay. I am a part of this society. Very important stuff. And that, my friends, is all the news that's out there. That's a lot of news for you guys this week. We covered a lot of ground. You guys know what to do. You need to get out there. You need to use your voice to make a difference for your LGBTQ and ally brothers and sisters. Use your voice. However you do it, just go out there and use your voice. It will make you feel great, and it will make a difference in this world. And as you're out there using your voice, as you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Say that you are not, but I